Audio on Book, Poland, home of mediums. Also much on Medium Klaski. Of Zofia Weaver, PhD. Abstract. The paper discusses Polish psychics and psychical researchers of the first half of the 20th century. It sketches in the background against which psychical research developed in Poland, and goes on to discuss in some detail the professional medium Jan Guzik, and the two outstanding psychics of the period, Franek Kluski and Stefan Osoki. Historical background. Harry Price, who referred to Poland as home of mediums, Price, 1939, in a chapter describing his visit there in August 1923, was not exaggerating unduly. Some truly remarkable reports of psychic phenomena came out of Poland in the first half of the 20th century, in the period preceding the Second World War. At the time they attracted a great deal of interest from Western psychical researchers but, by now, for a variety of reasons, they have been largely forgotten. Tales of Days Gone By, featuring spectacular psychokinetic, materializing and clairvoyant feats such as never seem to happen these days, may quite naturally be regarded by many as part of parapsychology's folklore, rather than as evidence to be taken seriously. Yet, re-examined within their cultural context, with due regard to the methods, beliefs and personalities of both the investigators and the subjects, they are not quite so easy to dismiss. This paper attempts to provide a wider background to what might be called the golden age of Polish psychics. Tracing the history of psychical research in Poland is complicated by the fact that most of its records have been destroyed or fragmented, mainly during the destruction of Warsaw towards the end of the Second World War. Many private archives, as well as the archives of the Polish equivalent of the British Society for Psychical Research, were lost, and even the National Library in Warsaw does not possess a full set of extant copies of its journal. Primary sources are thus often difficult to find, but fortunately information about the most interesting Polish psychics and their investigators, scattered and fragmented though it is, can be gleaned from a variety of other sources. The interest in matters psychical in Poland followed a pattern similar to that of the rest of Europe, and developed on a number of levels. D.D. Holmes' performances in Paris were the subject of close interest to a number of members of the Polish émigré community. The table-turning mania of the second half of 19th century spread to The reaction, however, was on the whole one of disappointment in the undignified antics of the spirits, with at least one émigré, a famous poet, suspecting Holmes of having dealings with the devil. Krasiński, 1931. Warsaw and other major centers of Polish culture, at a more intellectual level there was interest in the philosophical issues raised by the challenge science posed for religion and the rising status of the scientific approach in shaping the prevalent worldview. The researchers, psychical research in Poland, as elsewhere, was not a recognized scientific subject, and its development depended very much on the dedication and drive of a small number of individuals, who shaped to a significant degree the direction it took. In Poland's case, the two individuals who had the greatest influence in this area were Julian Okerowicz, 1850-1917, and Piotr Lebedzinski, 1860-1934. Julian Okerowicz was a man of exceptional genius, with degrees and higher degrees in philology, physics and mathematics, natural sciences, philosophy and psychology, as well as being a highly successful inventor. He pursued his interest in hypnosis working with Charcot and Janet during the 1880s. He worked with, and knew, most of the psychical researchers of the day, such as Myers, Lodge and Richer. Many of the results of his research with mediums have been published in the Annales des Sciences Psychiques. His hypothesis of ideoplasty, that is, that images created by suggestion can be realized by the body, rather the way a blister can form when a person believes s, he had been burned, first put forward in two papers presented to the Biological Society in Paris in 1884, was influential among many researchers of the day, Okerowicz, 1916-1996. Although today he is regarded as one of the founding fathers of Polish psychology, During his life, his interest in psychic phenomena damaged his academic career and his scientific reputation. The tragic irony is that he was very much a hard scientist, with a good knowledge of conjuring, insisting on experimenting in good light, in well-controlled conditions. He was also uncompromisingly against spiritualism and anything occult, rejecting any supernatural interpretation of the mediumistic phenomena. His descriptions of the sittings he attended with fake mediums and enthusiastic circles make hilarious reading. They also demonstrate that informed skepticism as a useful research tool is not a modern invention. Akerowicz, 1913-1915. Piotr Lebedzinski was a chemist by education and a great inventor of apparatus, particularly relating to psychical research. He worked with Akerowicz and was also of the same hard scientist school. He was the founder of the Polish Society for Psychical Research, established in 1914 in Warsaw, and one of its most active members, Szczepanski, 1936, p.48. He had vast experience of investigating physical mediums. Neither he nor Akerowicz took the attitude "once a cheat, always a cheat" to mediums who were exposed in fraud, which some of the SPR members adopted at the time. However, Akerowicz had sittings with Palladino, apparently very successful, in Warsaw in 1893-4, where she produced phenomena in good light. He regarded attempts to cheat, which did take place in the Warsaw sittings, as part of the mediumistic process, and would put a stop to them immediately. He disagreed with the approach taken by some of the SPR investigators, which allowed cheating to go unchecked and then condemning the medium as a fake. Akerowicz, 1913-15. Some of Lebedzinski's pronouncements on the standards one should demand in researching such mediums clearly point to an uncompromising attitude. Never agree to conduct experiments in which visual control is not possible. Never allow the relaxation of controls already established. If possible, catch your mediums before they know what they can do and get a chance to be corrupted by spiritualist circles. In fact, the spiritualist movement was very weak in Poland, and that is the other important feature of psychical research there. The chattering classes in Warsaw may have flocked to seances in order to experience the thrill of seeing and being touched by the not too closely defined phantoms, but that is not the same as seeking to communicate with the dead through the mediumship of living persons. This was, and still is, explicitly forbidden by the Roman Catholic Church, whose influence in Poland, not just on the social level, but also on personal and emotional level, was, and is, very strong. For a variety of historical and cultural reasons, the issue of proving survival, so prominent in psychical research in Britain, just does not arise in a situation where survival at a level unreachable by science is taken for granted by the majority. This does not, of course, preclude individuals from making attempts at communication sittings, and some members of the Polish SPR did make them, but the most prominent investigators took the view that they were dealing with human powers not as yet understood. Insofar as a belief influenced them, it seems to have been the belief that they were on the brink of discovering a new branch of science. Thus they set up experimental conditions as conscientiously and described them as thoroughly as they could. This scientific spirit is represented by some of the most active members of the Polish SPR. There was Dr. Tadeusz Sokutowski, a medical man, later professor, who was chief hospital administrator for Warsaw hospitals in the period between the wars. There was Stefan Ziewaski, whose background I have not been able to trace but who was ruthless in exposing fraudulent physical mediums. There was the meticulous Prosper Murio, a treasury inspector and honorary editor of the Journal of the Polish SPR. Ludwik Szczepanski, who was the editor of one of the main national dailies during the 1930s, did a great deal to popularize a scientific rather than sensationalist approach to the subject. They, and people like them, did not have the facilities of a special laboratory, such as the International Metapsychical Institute, IMI, in Paris where Jelly experimented, or the National Laboratory established in London by Harry Price. Everything they did was in their spare time and with limited resources, but they did have the necessary qualities of insatiable curiosity, lack of presuppositions and an awareness of scientific methodology, in fact, all the essential attributes which go to make a sound researcher. This does not mean, of course, that they were proof against being fooled by a sophisticated fraudster, or misplaced trust in a particular psychic type of control or line of interpretation. Their experimental work and reporting also varies in quality. However, even though they may not have lived up to their own standards at all times, it would hardly be fair to accuse them of naively seeking props for waning religious beliefs, or lacking awareness of the possibility of their own bias. The early psychics. The psychics investigated by the researchers mentioned above included some remarkable mediums. One of these was Stanisław Tomaszek, the subject of many reports by Julian Akerowicz, Szczepanski undated, Akerowicz, 1910-1912. In the years 1909-12 she produced some spectacular telekinetic feats, as well as a number of secondary personalities, and apparently demonstrated her gifts in front of a scientific commission. She was not a professional medium, but a girl who acquired her strange powers after undergoing the trauma of imprisonment, Szczepanski, 1936, pp. 34-35. She went on to marry Everard Fielding, one of the researchers involved in investigating her case, and a member of the British SPR. It has proved impossible so far to find out whether she produced further phenomena after this. Another Stanisław, Stanisław Popielska, was the subject of research by Schrenck-Notzing and by Piotr Lebedzinski. As a young, simple, barely literate 19-year-old, she produced some impressive sittings for Schrenck-Notzing during 1912-13, involving the production of ectoplasm, although he regarded her phenomena as less evidential than Eva C. S., Schrenck-Notzing, 1923, p. 252. According to Szczepanski, 1936, p. 48, she was the medium from whom Lebedzinski obtained in 1916 a piece of ectoplasm for the first time. She went on to become a professional medium but, according to her obituary in 1938, Ilustrowany Kuriakodziany, Illustrated Daily Courier, the 29th of March 1938, her credibility was damaged after being caught cheating by Osti in 1931. The psychic career of these ladies certainly deserves re-examination, but new material about them is difficult to obtain, and one can only hope that further evidence might come to light even after all these years. They share with many mediums a degree of anonymity, their only claim to our interest being the phenomena they supposedly produced. Another medium who shares this characteristic but belongs to a later period is Jan Guzik. He was investigated in detail by, among others, Gustav Jelly, 1924, pp. 304-375, and his case history seems to follow a pattern fairly typical of many physical mediums of the day. Jan Guzik. Jan Guzik, 1876-1928, was a professional materializing medium. He came from a poor working class background. In his childhood he was allegedly the source of strange phenomena, with knocks, raps and movement of objects, effects often described in poltergeist cases, following him about. He was taken up by enthusiastic and naive followers of the paranormal, even going to St. Petersburg to be studied by Aksakov. He tried to make an honest living as a tanner, setting up a workshop in a partnership outside Warsaw. This enterprise failed, so he returned to Warsaw and set himself up as a professional medium, Szczepanski, 1936, pp. 95-100. In his seances, for which he had a professional manager, he produced traps, lights, apparitions, a port, voices and automatic writing, although he was frequently exposed for fraud by both Polish and foreign investigators, and even ordinary visitors, he was a great commercial success. Going to see Guzik was regarded by many as a fashionable form of entertainment which he exploited. In the early 1920s he was giving 2 to 3 seances a day, but would not submit to systematic studies or proper controls. According to Szczeparski, Guzik seemed slow mentally and uninterested in anything but money and his family. He was an excellent husband and father, but in fact he had great powers of observation and self-control if one watched him carefully. Akerowicz refused to investigate Guzik, because he would not submit to the required controls. Lebedziewski did work with Guzik, and while he does not directly accuse Guzik of cheating, he does say that the early Guzik was much better, and produced phenomena in a light strong enough to watch the faces and hands of the medium and the participants. Lebedziewski, 1924-1925. In December 1923 a committee of Sorbonne professors declared him fraudulent. According to Wilhelm Neumann, from the fact that the actions at a distance produced by Guzik could have been imitated by means of a leg movement and the fact that there were no phenomena during 4 sittings when the controls were particularly severe, the professors have drawn the remarkable conclusion that the medium had produced the phenomena fraudulently. Neumann, 1924-2002. Although in this case Guzik seems to have been condemned on the basis of inference rather than evidence, Harry Price, who had a sitting with Guzik in Warsaw in 1923, makes very specific accusations and describes the medium as one of the cleverest fakers I have ever met, especially clever with his feet. All the phenomena at the Harry Price seance were fraudulent, with the animal apparition being produced with the help of a stocking with luminous spots painted on 4 eyes, and the appropriate noises. It is thus hardly surprising that Guzik refused to be tested in Harry Price's laboratory. Price, 1933, p.275. It seems clear that, whatever gifts Guzik possessed early on, they were not available to him on demand, and hardly at all in later life. Yet Gustav Jelly describes experiments with Guzik, both those at him and other locations in France, and in Warsaw, as highly successful. He quotes a report signed by a number of distinguished persons testifying that they were convinced by the reality of what they experienced. Unfortunately, I have been unable to trace any accounts of sittings with Guzik by Polish investigators. Such sittings undoubtedly took place. There are passing references to them in other contexts, and reports would have been produced, but presumably no records of them have survived. It is interesting to note that the available account of sittings in a red light, with sitters controlling the medium's hands and legs, does not report Guzik's usual phenomena, such as materialized animals or apparitions. Neumann, 1924-2002. The fact that Guzik's phenomena made such an impression on Jelly can be interpreted in a number of ways. Although one tends to suspect defective experimental conditions as the most likely cause, Jelly himself is adamant that fraud was impossible at the IMO seances, and indeed it is difficult to see how some of the phenomena could have been produced under the prevailing conditions. Jelly, 1924, pages 304-375, even taking into account the fact that the seances took place in total darkness. It may indeed thus be the case that, when controls were imposed, Guzik produced genuine phenomena, or that Jelly was the kind of experimenter who brings out the best in his subjects. It is difficult to ascertain from Jelly's writing there. Sequence of events at particular seances, and the exact state of controls at each stage, since he tends to summarize effects rather than give point-by-point detailed accounts of sittings. More importantly, Jelly's style of reporting makes it difficult for a reader without background knowledge to make a significant enough distinction between the story of Jan Guzik and that of Teufel Mordzczki, better known to psychical researchers as Franek Kluski. Franek Kluski, 1873-1943. Kluski, the unique Polish medium. To say Franek Kluski was an exceptional medium is an understatement. In seances while entranced he produced phantoms of hands, globes of light, and fully formed people and animals among other phenomena. In everyday life he exhibited startling wonders such as little fires seen inside his mouth or around his head. For his seances he took the name Kluski, which are very ordinary Polish noodles, The medium who called himself Klusky was actually named Teofil Mordzhsky, a very extraordinary Polish gentleman, a banker, journalist and poet with unique and outstanding capabilities and gifts. Klusky in trance. Phantom of soldier behind him. Klusky in trance. Phantom of soldier behind him. The seance's organizer tested him and discovered that when Mr. M. held a magnet, violet flashes were seen emanating from both poles, small p, no pun intended. Franek Klusky was born. Klusky's psychic origins. Psychic phenomena were always part of Klusky's life. His father was prone to spontaneous phenomena and often felt he was visited by the spirit of his own father, who would materialize, scold him for drinking too much, and slap him if he showed any disrespect. His father's brother, a priest, was mediumistic and had telepathic visions. With this kind of family, no wonder that little boy who would become Klusky began having precognitive visions and seeing phantoms, which he accepted as living beings, at around 5 or 6 years old. ODD phenomena around Klusky. This very respectable businessman and scholar lived a very staid and normal life except for a few strange things. He would absorb odors to which he was exposed. For instance, if he walked down a street where lime trees were blossoming, he would not only return home reeking of lime blossoms but would give off that aroma for days. He also seemed to absorb people's physical conditions when he was near them. It was well known that when he came to the editorial office from which he worked, lights would flicker or be unreliable. The needles of compasses would deflect or spin if he was near them. Little lights would be seen dancing about his head and body. While sharing a hotel room with an associate, the man saw little fires in Klusky's mouth while he slept. He was also very rattled by electrical storms. He would become very agitated, have tingling in his limbs, and bluish flames could be seen escaping from the ends of his fingers. Storms would exhaust him, just as later he would become exhausted after a seance. He refused to hold seances during storms. Lights in the seance. These electrical or light phenomena were prominent in his seances, which were unique in the variety and number of lights and electrical effects. Most sessions would begin and end with lights of various sizes and colors flying around the darkened room. Many phantoms appeared lit from within or illuminating themselves with light streaming from their hands, often in shades of green. Lights were not just spherical but formed various shapes and could be in shades of green, yellow, blue or red. Luminous clouds would often form, sometimes morphing into phantoms. Investigating Klusky's phenomena. At first Klusky demonstrated his abilities only for friends and acquaintances. Later he sat in many European cities for professors, businessmen, physicians, lawyers etc. as well as psychic investigators such as Jelly and Risch in France, Fielding in England, and others. Even the most skeptical witnesses came away convinced of the reality of his phenomena, including a well-known magician, George Lang, who observed him on 3 occasions and was satisfied that the effects could not be produced by tricks. Klusky's wax molds. One famous aspect of Klusky's mediumship was the wax molds, mostly of hands, made during his seances. A tub or basin of hot water with paraffin floating on it would be placed in the center of the table. While the medium lay senseless, head on the table, his hands and legs controlled, splashes would be heard, and sitters would often be spattered with the wax. They would hear a soft thump as something was deposited on the table or on their hands, and they could feel the warm, still soft wax of the fragile molds. Plaster casts made from wax molds of phantom hands. Plaster casts made from wax molds of phantom hands. The molds would cool quickly, and once the lights were back on, sitters would find hands of different sizes and shapes, some childlike in size. Often the hand would be clenched or in a position from which, if a human would attempt to free his, her hand from the wax, would find it impossible without breaking the mold. Jelly and Risch's experiments with Klusky. Gustav Jelly and Charles Risch of the Institut Métapsychique International, in Paris invited Klusky to participate in a series of seances where they hoped to provide evidence for the reality of his phenomena but also to try to find a permanent paranormal object, that is, one that could not be created by normal means. Klusky, in controlled experiments, produced the wax molds, which then were carefully filled with plaster, by the investigators, to preserve the fragile shapes. They may still be seen at the IM in Paris. To counter any accusations that wax molds were sneaked into the seance room, jelly tinted the paraffin blue at the last minute. The molds produced that day were of the same blue tinted wax. They repeated this procedure another day with cholesterol, with similar positive results. The scientists asked Klusky to produce hands whose fingers were spread wide. He complied and the molds show hands with fingers splayed far apart. One looks a little like Mr. Spock's greeting with the middle finger separated from the ring finger a little wider than the others. Klusky's similarities to D.D.Home and Indridason. Klusky never took payment for his seance work and like D.D.Home and Indridason was never found to be fraudulent. He also produced a great variety of large-scale, indisputably distinct phenomena, which often took place spontaneously, and beyond his reach or at a distance from his person. Like those other extraordinary mediums, too, he was of delicate health and developed tuberculosis. He was ill as a child and both his brother and sister died at an early age. All three men produced phantom figures and lights. Klusky's phantoms often, like Cook's Katie King, resembled himself, especially at the beginning of his mediumistic work. Later on they would at times resemble him and then change into a different distinct entity, for example, soldiers in complete, accurately accessorized uniforms. However, Klusky also produced animals including a large bird of prey and a kind of ape man the reports called a Pithecanthropus or primitive man. This creature was covered with light brown hair and smacked its lips loudly. There were also mongoose-like animals that ran around the table and scrambled up sitters' arms. Spontaneous park around Klusky. Like Indridason, he caused poltergeist-like occurrences with furniture piling up in precariously balanced stacks. Klusky's typewriter typed rapidly without anyone near it, both in and out of seances. When it typed passages, they were done as perfectly as though a good secretary had typed them. A final word and thank you to Klusky expert Dr. Zofia Weaver. I will give Dr. Weaver the final word. Here is part of her perceptive conclusion to her entry on Klusky in the Science Cyclopedia. The phenomena that took place around Klusky are on a spectacular scale, but they are not unique. Like much physical mediumship, they have their echoes in poltergeist reports of raps, levitations, movements of objects, lights and apparitions. What makes Klusky unique is the development of his mediumship and the way it reflects his mental life. It is usual for the medium to be controlled and guided by spirits, or experimenters, thus becoming instruments, experimental objects. By contrast, Klusky's attitude was from the beginning that of a detached observer of his own phenomena, and the participants and investigators were his friends and equals, as well as contributors to the formation of the phenomena. In a sense, the chief experimenter was Klusky himself, whether he was conscious or not, since the phenomena related in a number of ways directly to his imagination and his creative powers. Science Cyclopedia, here, it means on YouTube, is an interview by Jeffrey Mislov about Franek Klusky with the foremost expert on him, Dr. Zofia Weaver. Dr. Weaver is British but was born in Poland, is fluent in both languages, and has translated many materials into English that were not available to us prior to her work. Franek Klusky was never caught in any fraudulent action, although he was investigated by numerous researchers, and willingly submitted to the conditions they demanded. The principal foreign investigators of Klusky were Gustav Jelly and Charles Richer, and most of the information available in the West comes from Gustav Jelly's reports. However, there also exists a large number of reports from Polish researchers and independent witnesses, published contemporaneously in Poland by an eager researcher and a friend of Klusky, Norbert Okotowicz, 1926 degrees, not to be confused with Julian Okorowicz's